T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Tony, hour 2. Guest in the house. Let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
The majority of folks here in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One.
One job.
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
We do it every Monday on a Built for Tough Bears Monday on The Score. If Anthony Herron was joining me here on the phone, I would tell you that he was joining me courtesy on the Alphamonte Ford hotline. Alphamonte Ford, 500 new and used Fords for you to choose from out in Melrose Park. But he's here in studio, as he often is, with me on a Monday, even after the trials and tribulations of traveling. That's a lot of alliteration for me. All the way back from Pullman, Washington.
Yeah.
So, Bears win yesterday. Mm-hmm. That was nice that they won. But I was listening to you and Ola yesterday, and you guys both thought that the win came a little ugly.
It did.
So what was ugly about the win?
Obviously the expectations coming into the season are going to be ingrained in the storyline of how we perceive this year, regardless of what the results are. And what we saw from them yesterday, where there's a standard that it feels was set last year and you expect with a lot of the same cast of characters returning, and you know, aside from Kyle Long, who's no longer on the field, none of them are necessarily over the hill. You know, most of them are not even what should be at the peak or in the prime of their expertise at this level. So, you know, expected progression. It hasn't been there this season, and there's a lot of reasons why. And there's things that are going on this year that, as you know, I was talking to you about last season that were signs of concern for how they operated with some of the clever elements of the offense, especially in short yardage and red zone scenarios that have continued to be issues this year. But now that so many other things about the team aren't going well, then those problems are exacerbated. Those problems are enhanced. Those problems are more visible to the masses. And, you know, so I suppose where I've been on the more than Mitch kick, where initially it's like, oh man, this dude's caping for Mitch Trubisky. Now all of a sudden there's a lot more folks like, oh, maybe there's things worthy of examination beyond just the frailties of the quarterback, because the quarterback needs to be better. That's fine to say, but the head coach needs to be better. The game plan needs to be better. The execution of players in key moments needs to be better. And then you add in the fact that there's, at certain spots, I think it was last week, I was talking to you about even just simply catching the ball, which was a strength for this crew last season, which was part of why the quarterback performance was minimized a bit in perception last year. It's like, oh, well, look at all these plays the dudes are making for them. They catch contested balls. They're grading out above other receiver cores in the league. And, you know, that's even become a weakness at this point with the way that there's just so many drops. Tariq Cohen, who's not, admittedly, not even just strictly a running back, leading running backs in drops this season. The entire core of pass catchers leading the NFL in drops. Something like that that you wouldn't expect as a crew for that to be a regression. You would think that if anything regresses, maybe they're, you know, like the lack of separation that didn't seem as evident last season, that is far more constant now where there's a lack of separation for the pass catchers. That, okay, all right, there's could be some physical issues where you say, all right, maybe a Trey Burton being injured has been part of that issue. It's hard to say why Taylor Gabriel isn't consistently coming open when he's running routes, but that would at least be a bit more explainable than just them not catching the rock. So there's some of these things that add up that I was even highlighting last year. There's some things that are just really beyond explanation for why they're not happening at the level that they did last year.
Big Ann Heron is one of our experts here at The Score. He also hosts a Sirius XM Big Ten channel. He hosts, he covers games for the Pac-12 Network. He's over hosting on Fox 32 after the game is done. He knows what he's talking about, and he's a joy to talk with. The performance of Mitchell Trubisky yesterday, what did you think of it?
What I liked was that, but see, I don't mind Mitch throwing a couple of interceptions because to me, I think he's at a point where I want to see him in attack mode. And I think that there were moments where him throwing picks, you know, the first pick was explainable and he and Matt Nagy kind of went through it afterwards. The second pick, you know, if you call it a third and 10 punt, fine, but it was a really ugly ball. Aside from the two interceptions, I thought overall his performance was okay. It's just there's such inconsistency with his performance. To me, I need to see him at some point come out firing from the start. And, you know, drops are a big problem. And early in the game, when you're getting drops from Broniker or drops from Gabriel or drops from Cohen, those are just drive killers. But even just Mitch, mechanically, Mitch with his accuracy early in games is a part of the problem as well. For whatever reason, when you get late second quarter, and they come out in the third quarter, then things start to get cooking. And what it's we can put some of it, perhaps a lot of it, on Matt Nagy, but then also just his performance, the way he comes out early in game, continues to be a problem as well. You see the middle portion of the game, and then at some points when necessary, late in game, if there's, all right, it's time for a big drive. We're trailing. We need some points on the board. Let's go into hurry-up mode. And then that's where he seems to get going. But early in game, Mitch has to get to the point where he doesn't have to warm up or get into the flow of the game. Mitch needs to be a guy who can come out and start much faster than he does. And that's just one symptom of all the problems with the offense. I mean, if guys are catching the ball, then that adds up and that helps things. If guys are pass protecting, which overall pass protection I thought was pretty solid yesterday, but Mitch individually needs to get to the point where he's going early. So I thought it was another fine performance. There's plenty of performances this year that folks downgraded more when the Bears would lose than I thought from Mitch is what his individual grade of the game was, in my opinion. So yesterday I thought it was another fine performance. I want to see more from him specifically at the start of the game when he comes out and not have to ease his way into it and then get hot in the middle portion of the game.
Do you think that's a him problem or is that a overall Bears problem?
I think it's been an overall Bears problem throughout the scope of this season. That, to me, I do believe Matt Nagy's made some improvements in the way – Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich, in my opinion, have improved in the way that, as I've stated to you before, where I think Nagy tends to call the game for the quarterback he wishes he had or for the quarterback he wants to have as opposed to the quarterback he does have. And I do think that's progressed throughout the year. Especially yesterday, what I loved seeing was from early on in the game, the amount of movement of the pocket, the amount of launch point variability that they showed, getting Mitch on bootlegs, on sprint actions, and using. You know, he doesn't have the biggest arm in the league, but he's got enough arm where that little half roll they did where he's throwing back all the way across the field to Allen Robinson, I thought that was great. I thought where they got to a point in the second and really even more so the third quarter where they were starting to attack Corey Ballantyne. I thought that made a big difference in the game, so it was great to see that take place. But coming out early where the game plan itself, I thought, you know, suited what we wanted to see. There was some run game. There was some movement of the pocket. Those are playing to Mitch's strengths in a way that wasn't happening earlier in the season. Him starting slow, that to me is on him. Him being errant on passes, him forcing guys to jump for balls at times, that's on him. Once he warms up, then things start going well, and then that's where it accentuates where other guys, you know, at times are still failing. But him finding, and especially when it came to attacking Ballantyne over and over again with Allen Robinson, with Anthony Miller, and game plan wise, all right, that's the mullet over there, as my D-line coach Charles Haley used to call it, the mullet, whatever the weakness is in that pass protection, or in this case, the weakness in the opposing secondary was 25, let's go get him. And beyond just calling the plays themselves, but saying within the construct of the play, Mitch, make sure you find that dude, and Mitch being able to process the game in a way where even if Robinson or Miller weren't necessarily the primary receiver on a route, but just knowing we're going to exploit a weakness that's become apparent at this point. He even tried it with Wims a few times in the fourth quarter, And, you know, they just didn't connect a couple of times. But it was nice to see them beyond just game planning into Mitch's strengths more, but then Mitch also being able to handle in the midst of all the different personnel groups and motions and everything they're doing, but saying, all right, let's attack this dude. That's what you see high-level offenses be able to do. Bears are far from a high-level offense, but that to me is a sign of growth for what they potentially could become, because that's not necessarily something we've seen the Bears and their passing attack show a capability of doing, is really exploiting an individual weakness from a personnel standpoint.
Okay, I want to play a piece of Mitch's post game for you, because I want to see if you take it the same way that I do.
Sure.
This was Mitch yesterday talking about why he likes the hurry up, why he likes the 2-minute offense.
I could just see the defense not thinking as much. Guys are in their spots. You're not worried about the play clock. You're just seeing space. You're seeing the defense, and you're kind of just reacting. And it's something I've been doing my whole life, so it's more natural for me. But it shouldn't be any different than on the huddle. I mean, on the ball, no huddle, and coming out of a huddle, if we just have that tempo and urgency and everybody is mindful of doing their jobs, it should have the same result. But I think just the comfort level that we have with our 2-minute offense is the strength of our offense right now.
I hear a quarterback that's saying, this is what I do. Can we do more of it? You're right. I should be better in the other stuff, but I can do this. Can I get some more of that? Am I reading that correctly?
I think possibly. It's not the first time we've heard Mitch utter that yesterday either. You know, he's been posed that question before, and he's answered it in a similar fashion. I think we're all of our awareness is becoming more and more heightened of what's being said by Matt Nagy about Mitch Trubisky, what's being said by Mitch Trubisky about the offense and about relationships, about his center, about his head coach and all those things. So I think all those things are heightened right now. But Mitch has said that multiple times this season when folks have asked him about the hurry up. It's been noticed more here in recent weeks. You know, it's something I've been talking about a lot this season and hoping that the Bears could get a couple of drives into a game and then just get into hurry up mode just because they operate well in that setting. And to be able to do that, I'm glad they're starting to add that more into the offense. I believe the construct of the offense is growing more towards where it needs to be, where, frankly, it should have been very early in the season. It's one thing, and I mean, the game plan and the play calling for the Green Bay game was atrocious, and I think Matt Nagy, I'm sure he knew that on the spot, and then he tried to correct it in the weeks after that. But it's another to get to all the way to this point in the season and still be now just kind of figuring out what it is, why it is, and what works best, and be willing to shape the game in that manner. But I do believe it's happening, though. So while it's later than I think we would probably like it to be, I do think over the past, let's call it month, we've seen Matt Nagy, Mark Helfrich, Dave Ragone, you know, whoever all is involved, Brad Childress, who's involved in constructing the offensive game plan, and then, of course, Nagy calling it in-game, I do think it's moving more in that direction. So now that the game is being called more in a manner to the strengths of the team, I mean, the run game is a completely different work that's just not in progress. It's failing constantly. But from a passing game standpoint, we do see them trying to still keep some balance. It sets up the boots and the rolls, the movement of the pocket, and it allows some attack mode while not forcing Mitch, like Olin and I were talking about on post yesterday, not forcing Mitch every single snap to have to process things at such a high level because it's just not his strength yet. But there's a lot of quarterbacks that wasn't their strength early in their career, and it worked out fine. Man, that's the thing that to me is frustrating about the Mitch discussion. It's not only because he's being compared to Mahomes and Watson, who are just elite of elite, and it would have been great if the Bears picked him, but they didn't. But that doesn't mean there's not a version of football that can't win with this guy. There was a version of football that won a division title with this guy last season. Now, it's a better division this year. He needs to be better. They all need to be better. All those things are accurate. But Mitch not being those two dudes doesn't mean he can't win games. I mean, Russell Wilson, who's, in my opinion, the league MVP this season, there was a version of football that the Seahawks were winning that didn't involve Russell Wilson doing a whole lot with his arm early in his career. Ben Roethlisberger was not very involved from a passing standpoint early in his career.
Even in the first Super Bowl, yeah.
Even in the first Super Bowl win, in either one of the Super Bowls that Russell Wilson was in, driving the Seahawks to the Super Bowl, it wasn't because he was a great passer early in his career, a great processor of information early in his career. We're seeing Lamar Jackson right now. What's happening with the Baltimore Ravens? the other main MVP competitor. Now, Mitch isn't the athlete that Lamar Jackson is. He isn't the runner that Russell Wilson is even. But he's more than mobile enough for you to have that be a strict part of the game plan. Jimmy Garoppolo isn't even having to run with the 49ers, but they still use some RPO tenets, and they still don't ask him to be a volume passer. And they're looking like the best team in the National Football League right now. So to me, just to be able to condense the game plan in a manner that suits the skill and the processing ability of your quarterback, that to me has been a big failing of the offensive game plan for the Bears throughout the scope of the season. I believe they're finally getting to the point of recognizing what needs to happen, how the game plan needs to operate to suit the strength of their defense. The difference with where the Bears are right now versus a lot of these other quarterbacks I'm discussing, whether it's been Roethlisberger or Russell Wilson or now Jimmy Garoppolo or Tom Brady early in his career, there's a defense here in Chicago that can suit that, that can get that done. The run game is just so far behind where you can win at a high level and have your quarterback not have to carry a major load. So that's the huge frailty with the overall construct of how you can really win in that manner. Because if your run game isn't working and you're asking your quarterback not to do much, then it's going to be difficult to put points on the board. That's where, to me, because Mitch is the QB right now, I have more concern with how you get a run game going than just saying, well, all right, let's throw our hands up and Mitch has to do it all, because he just can't do it all right now.
I need the perspective of someone who has actually played this game to help me out on this next one. I'm trying to figure out whether David Montgomery or the offensive line is the problem with the run game. and it's hard to separate the two,
yeah.
But you would know. Uh-huh. What am I watching? What's happening? And why is this such a problem?
David Montgomery is a runner with the skill. You know what? He was not on the field, but in a game yesterday with a guy of a very similar running style. Saquon Barkley, my concerns, and he's got a bad ankle. He had huge yards last season. He's a very generational talent as a back. But Saquon Barkley runs like a souped-up Barry Sanders. Like if Barry Sanders turned green and went Hulk on everybody, he would look like Saquon Barkley. And Barkley has a very similar running style, where you saw the Bears defense, and it, you know, credit to Chuck Pagano, like there was a third and short where you saw Leonard Floyd, like Charles Haley used to just show us film of him when he was with the Cowboys and they game plan Barry Sanders, and Charles would just wait on the backside, shoulder square, feet chattering, just waiting for Barry Sanders to pop it back, to cut it back against the grain, because you knew he wasn't necessarily, he may even press the hole for a moment, but you're just waiting on that cutback. Saquon Barkley was that guy in college. It was a concern of mine in his evaluation. He's so elite physically that it's fine. You just deal with it. But in addition to his bum ankle right now, his running style doesn't necessarily suit consistent productivity because his style is very inconsistent. That's what I see from David Montgomery. And even when he was gaining yards at different points, something I sat here with you and pointed out over and over again, his running style, it's nice to show some patience on occasion, but you need to be willing to run through the smoke. When the hole does not initially declare itself, does not immediately show that it's there, he's got so much power in his lower body. That's why it's so difficult to bring him down in the backfield. But then as opposed to I'm wrestling with somebody a yard in the backfield, start wrestling with somebody a yard that you've gained, a yard on their side of the line of scrimmage, maybe even 2 yards on their side of the line of scrimmage, while your momentum and the momentum of your offensive line is moving in unison. Then maybe it's a 3 or 4 yard gain more consistently as opposed to at the line of scrimmage or wrestling in the backfield to sort of fall forward for a moment. So all that being said, the offensive line just hasn't blocked the run well consistently this year. But I believe, and I'm going to keep beating this Jordan Howard drum, where Jordan Howard's style, when they would call plays that allowed him to go vertical more immediately, like that month of December last season, even where the offensive line struggled in run blocking a lot last season, but with Jordan Howard's more immediate pressing of the hole than you just saw him as a player, and the statistics back it up, where the Bears didn't lose yards nearly as consistently in the ground attack last season as they have this year because the style of the main ball carrier said, I'm moving forward no matter what. Defenders are coming with me. Offensive linemen are coming with me. And when the game plan of the rushing attack suited that in December, you saw yards being churned out. So right now it is the offensive line struggling. Rashad Coward, I thought, actually did a pretty nice job in pass protection. Rashad Coward did a nice job in pass protection yesterday, blocking some twist stunts, blocking some movement up front. that for a young offensive guard who hasn't done it long can be really difficult. He did at times struggle in the run phase of the game. They've got some new
even when they
and
pulled
talented,
him,
yes,
struggled.
Exactly. They've got some talented guys who they've added to that Giants front that gave him some issues yesterday. And it wasn't just him. Then you have Bobby Massey going out. Cornelius Lucas comes in. And there were some moments that were nice. Like, I love the QB lead on third and goal.
Me too.
From inside the 2-yard line, just keeping it simple, just moving some guys off the ball. It seemed like the entire offensive front and Mitch Trubisky were just really enthused about that play call. I thought it was great. It's a combination of the two, to answer your question in its most simple form. The running style of David Montgomery, I think, needs to improve with the way he reads holes as he's pressing them, as opposed to constantly looking for someone to twist or bounce off of and showing kind of too much patience before he really advances on the defense.
Would he benefit, if we just go super simple here, mm-hmm. would he benefit from, hey, David, I write 24 lead?
He seemed to when they did it. J.P. Holt has not completely disappeared from the blocking scheme the last couple of weeks, but as far as just where they had a couple of weeks in a row where it seemed like the run game had transitioned to Holt is going to be our fullback, and here's our lead game, and here's some ISOs, and here's some bob plays, and that just hasn't been as much of the game plan in either the Rams game or the Giants game. And Holtz is on the field. Like yesterday, he was on the field a good bit. He was an inline blocker, and he did a nice job with that. He was a lead blocker a few times. I'm not sure why when there was success with that. And it forces, you know, and the reason you're asking the question, just to make sure the listeners understand, what that does for a running back, when there's a lead blocker directly in front of the running back, it not only more immediately declares the hole, but his path is more determined for him as well. It's not only here's the design of the play, but you're getting right in the hip pocket of that lead blocker. He takes that first threat out as soon as there's any leak, any penetration, or if he's free up to the second level, even better, and he's just right now back on backer in the hole, and it more determines your vertical path as a runner. To me, it seems like that suiting, even though, you know, David Montgomery wasn't a guy who ran with a fullback in college, but as far as where he's at in his development and reading holes and attacking holes in the National Football League, he seems to have had his most success when he's either following a puller on a power play into the hole or a fullback out of the backfield, whether in neutral from an eye formation or just offset eye, and saying, here's the hole and here's a hip that you're running through to get through it. He seems to run better right now from that vantage point.
That is Anthony Heron. Follow him on Twitter. He's phenomenal. Big Ant Heron is where you can find him. You can also watch him on Fox 32 after Bears games are over. He joined us today on a Built Ford Tough Bears Monday on The Score, brought to you by your local Ford dealers and the Built Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. When we come back, I want to let you hear what my guys said on the TV show about Mitch and the way that he came to the podium yesterday. I'll give you a hint. They were impressed. I'll explain why next here on The Score. So you're just going to empty the folder this week, Tony? Is that what we're doing?
Yep, all the music I like.
All right. I mean, we're not going to get rid of it when you leave. I like some of this stuff,
Dom,
too.
Dom, deleting it all.
No, don't delete
He's
it
gone.
All.
He's gone. It's over.
No, he brought a real energy to the show, so we're not deleting Tony's music beds. I mean, we'll finally have some 90s hip hop in the show because that's what I like. Have you
listened sometimes?
Have you listened to the Diggable Planets album yet?
I did.
And
I enjoyed it.
It slaps, right?
It smooths. Yeah, it slaps, yeah.
We'll talk about your trip to get a steak coming up in a little bit. By the way, this segment is being brought to you by Subway Restaurants, featuring a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Subway, make it what you want. At participating restaurants, additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. And the bottom of the hour is being brought to you by the fine folks over at the Chicago Wolves. If you want to ride the Zamboni on the ice during intermission of a Chicago Wolves game, you need to sign up to take a spin on the new Turtle Wax Icebox. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES to learn more. We are winners. We are the Wolves. Yeah, Tony is going to go work for NBC Sports Chicago. He's going to be in charge of the podcasting initiative over there. So I believe that makes him my boss or something over there. I think that's how that's going to work.
Yep, I get to see, you know, who can do what and what their contract dictates.
Oh, all right.
And whatnot.
I got some ideas about a podcast. I actually have one very specific idea.
I'm thinking all ideas.
For a podcast with me and someone else who works there. I think it would be a winner. Just a thought. Anyway, Let's get back to the Bears. The Bears won yesterday. I've been talking a lot about Mitchell Trubisky and his approach at the podium. I work over at NBC Sports Chicago, do the football after show. Thanks for watching that, by the way. I appreciate that people will jump in and watch us, even if it's for a few minutes after the game before you go to your 3 o'clock games or care about what's going on with your fantasy. I appreciate that you watch. I got a good crew of guys. They're really smart. They're intuitive. They understand the way that locker culture works in the game of football. If you didn't know, I do a show after the games are over with Matt Forte, Olin Krutz, Lance Briggs, and Alex Brown. We ran the Mitchell Trubisky press conference yesterday. I thought it was interesting their reaction to what they heard from Mitch. Take a listen.
The bigger thing you hear them finally saying is what's they're saying what you see, what's wrong with them and what they do well. They're finally saying it, right? Mm-hmm. Now the how do we fix the miscommunication? Mm-hmm. Well, put in more work, Mitch. Grab your unit. Mm-hmm. You're the quarterback. Say, hey, guys, no one's going home when we're done today.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We're going to get this fixed, right? So it's good to finally hear the coach and the quarterback mm-hmm. saying what you're seeing anyway when you watch the film or watch the game.
That's what I'm talking about right there. You listen to Mitch talk up there. He doesn't seem happy by just winning. And then you listen to Nagy, and he seems like he's happy, like
agreed.
How today was. Mitch actually seems like upset. And if you didn't watch the game,
you wouldn't know
almost
they
think, yeah, you'd almost think they lost because he know they didn't play well. He knows that when you play a good football team that you're going to lose playing the way you play today. Mm-hmm. So you're missing big plays, Broniker dropping a ball, having the big play with Allen Robinson, and then having a penalty where you hurt yourself. Like, those things get you beat against a good team.
But given the game he played with some of the other inconsistencies,
mm-hmm. yep.
had he not thrown the two picks, but correct. With all the other stuff, mm-hmm. I think he still goes up kind of like Nagy was, a sigh of relief, like, I played well.
If he
like,
doesn't throw
I didn't
the,
make any mistakes.
Okay, so if he doesn't throw the red zone pick, mm-hmm. all right, the long pick that was like, down the field, I think that was just a bad play by him. But if he doesn't throw the red zone pick and they win by, let's say, 14 points, 17 points, I think if Broniker catches that ball, gets into the end zone, well, I think this turns into a much better game for him. His that passer rating isn't 69. It's closer to 95. And he doesn't have the two interceptions. He has three touchdowns and one interception. You know, much more yards because the 60-yard play to Allen Robinson is taken off of his
I'm saying with all the other inconsistencies, like his footwork mm-hmm. sometimes and some of the other mistakes that he'll make, you know, overthrow or whatever, mm-hmm. but not having the two big mistakes,
yeah.
I think he still
thinks that
his confidence is a little better
okay.
going into the press conference.
I think it was a clear-eyed, honest assessment of the way they played today.
And an
honest assessment when he was asked the question on what he thinks the offense and he does well.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it's not good enough. But now my question to Mitch would be, as a teammate for a quarterback, is, okay, cool, Mitch, what now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do we do now then? How do we get this communication fixed? How do we get you and Allen Robinson on the same play? How do we do more of what we're good at?
This is an opportunity for him to lead.
Yes. Yeah. And I think you're seeing him, like you said, he didn't sound like Coach Nagy, kind of step away and say, this is my team, which you want to see. I'm sure Coach Nagy wants to see. He wouldn't have a problem with that either. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, you take the team over.
Yes.
Take this team over. You be the guy.
It's interesting. Olin's talked about for the last couple of weeks, what are you doing in your week? What are you doing to make yourself better, to make sure that you're on the same page with other position groups? Are you in the offensive line meeting? Are you doing the work with David Montgomery? Are you working with the receivers after practice? And it's not just throwing routes. I think a lot of times people are like, well, you stay after practice. A lot of this stuff is conversations while watching film. Are we seeing the same thing? And is that work being put in? I think that it's interesting that Olin keeps bringing it up because Olin's really smart. And he wouldn't bring it up if he didn't think it was a problem. So it's another place where I think Mitch can get better. Like that idea of leadership, it extends beyond what happens on the practice field. I'll tell you how Tony did with a steak, man. He got a real steak. I'll tell you about it next here on The Score. So Friday, we left here after the show. Took the boys out for lunch over at Gibson's. It was really, really great. I didn't realize, Tony, it felt like to me, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, it felt like you hadn't really gone to like a super nice restaurant before in the middle of the day.
Yeah, no. Yeah, okay. No. Daytime food is for quick lunches where, you know, you're not, you know, oh, what's this? Let me get this appetizer. Like, no, just quick lunch so you can get enough for dinner.
All right, so everyone who is listening to the show knows that, you know, we had the conversation about you thinking steak was overrated, and then me being like, well, where have you had steak? You're like, I had steak one time at Outback Steakhouse. Did you realize the difference between the steak at Outback Steakhouse and the steak at a place like Gibson's?
Oh, yeah, it was definitely a huge difference.
From the first bite, right? Yeah. Like, you could tell from the or this was my best, and Christopher, you're a chef. You'll get a kick out of this. Watching him cut it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I saw the Twitter video. I saw it all. And thank you for enlightening Tony on his terrible takes of food, because I'm sorry, steak is not overrated one.
Well, watching him cut it and the ease with which he was able to cut it.
It's butter.
And he at one point, Tony, like, slammed the knife into the plate. Because he's used to
tough steak that you're gonna chew on for 15 minutes. He even chewed it though, like he was chewing one of the tough steaks. So that was a very long chew that he was going through. I get it, he was kind of savoring.
He was enjoying it,
but still, you know, that you don't need to chew that much for the steak.
First time with lobster bisque.
Yes, first time with lobster bisque.
Thoughts?
And that was pretty good. That was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I finished the whole thing.
So if I pay, you'll go back, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you got to pay, though. I'm not.
Come on now.
We'll see. Maybe we'll put you on the list, Christopher, and we'll bring you. But it was good, and the desserts were huge.
Yeah.
Oh, Gibson's top notch. Great.
But I don't know. I told Layla, because Layla asked about it after when I was at Bulls, and I was like, man, paying over $20, that's an investment, man. That's when you pay $50 to $60 for food, that is, how is this helping my life?
All right, so here are my favorite moments of this ranked, okay? Number three is you cutting into the steak and realizing what you were getting. Number two is you acquiescing. You, like, tasting the steak and being like, yeah, this is some real bleep right here. But number one for me was you looking at the prices, then looking at me like, you're paying for this, right?
Yeah, I just gotta make sure. There's no, if I don't need to grab a water with some lemon and some sugar packets, or if I'd be good with the bread. Yeah, I'm good with the bread. The bread's fine.
No, I'm paying. If I take you guys out, you guys are not paying. I'm the one who's paying.
I worked at a place that was $75 a plate.
Get that out of here.
I mean, that's Tony. That's what you had.
That's so
Tony. Ooh. That's what. Yeah, like, do you want to know what the bill was?
No, I do not.
Okay.
It is. You're right. It is an investment, but it's an investment in your enjoyment.
Yes.
Rather, that's the way you got to look at it.
I felt bad eating it.
Food. Like,
why?
Well, knowing that, you know, there's people out there in, you know, in the streets and in the cold, and you're paying for a $60. Piece of meat.
Food one is...
That I didn't eat all of it. I had to take home.
Well, food at that level is an indulgence, and it's an experience. It's not sustenance. You're thinking of it as a sustenance thing rather than an experience. At that level, it's an experience. It's something that I think most people should actually experience and enjoy it.
If you have the opportunity every now and again, you should experience it. And Tony, I'm glad that you were open to the experience. I'm glad that because I felt like I opened up something. It might be Pandora's box, but I felt like I opened up something, because the other thing that the honorable mention was Tony walking down Rush Street going, I've only heard about these stores in rap songs. It was a great, great Friday afternoon for me. It was really great, and I'm glad that Tony had a good time. And thanks to the folks over at Gibson's, they were tremendous to us and left us alone. And at the end, they were like, hey, you guys are the guys from the... You guys didn't even realize that's what was happening. As you guys were walking out the door...
Also, me and Rick kept walking, though.
Yeah, I got the thing, which I appreciate. We're going to talk with McNeil and Parkins coming up next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.